boom, boom.
I love to see you strut.
Boom, 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 boom.
Up and down the floor.
Boom, 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 boom.
When you talking to me.
Boom, 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 boom.
That podcast talk.
Boom, 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 boom.
I like it like that.
Boom, 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 boom.
Talk that talk.
Boom, 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 boom.
Walk that walk.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, I like it when you boom that way.
Boom, 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 boom.
You talk that podcast talk.
Boom, 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 boom.
You know I like it like that.
Boom, 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 boom.
Ooh, give it to me.
Boom, 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 boom.
Har, 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 har.
That's fun.
Is it fun?
That's fun. I think every day now I'm just going to say boom, 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 boom after everything somebody says. Har, 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 har.
It's the weekend of August 20th, 2005. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Pat.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Pat.
Take two.
It's show number 27, but it's really sort of like 27 and a half. You want to explain to the good kids what happened?
Yes. Well, bad things happen. We did
the whole show. We had an hour worth of really stunning material.
Stellar. Our best.
Our best. It was our best effort. I felt really good coming out of it.
And what happened? Engineer George screwed up.
He screwed up. He had the mixer channel for my mic going into the studio output and not into the recorder section. So we recorded Pat's mic only. So we have fired his ass. He is gone. And he was mad. Man, was he mad.
Well, we have every right to be mad. We did a whole show and now we have to do it over again. The studio's hotter than it was when we first came in.
Exactly.
We're going to be late. It's bad.
This is bad, man.
Anyway,
so we were thinking about just not doing the show, you know, because it's sort of like you kind of have your podcast out. But then I just thought, you know, it'll be interesting to do an experiment because we're going to do we got the same show notes going on. And this is either really going to suck, which it probably will be, because we're not going to be telling things to each other for the first time.
It's not fresh.
It's not fresh anymore. So, or it could be really, really good. Maybe it'll show that we should do the show beforehand first. But, but I'm thinking, I'm pretty doubtful that that's going to be the case. So, you know, if we suck, hey, then I don't know. Maybe doing a show is not as good as just not doing it this week, right? I don't know.
Who knows?
We don't know until it's done.
Hey, well, we saw some crazy walking yesterday, didn't we?
Crazy walking, crazy dancing.
Crazy dancing.
What'd we go do?
We went to go see some belly dancing.
The belly dancing. We talked about this, didn't we? Just kidding. We did talk about it. We had a fascinating discussion about it. I don't know how fascinating I can be about it again.
Try, you can.
This was called Yo Holla, Y'all.
Y'all.
And it was done by the Isis Star Dancers. It's a local group, but they also had a lot of international superstars there. Pat, what did you think of it?
I thought it was great. I expected there to be belly dancing, and there was, but it was just much better caliber than I expected.
Cool.
You know, but there were three sets, and I think each set of dancing was about an hour, so it was a lot longer than I thought it should be. Well, we stuck around for most of it.
Yeah.
But they had... it was kind of interesting because... You know, some of the dances, they had the very exotic costumes and the spangles on their hips and the cymbals and everything. And some of them, they kind of looked like more workout outfits, you know? Some of those black ones with the bras that looked more like athletic bras.
Yeah, some of them were stupid. And kind of what I liked was some of these dancers that looked exotic. Some of them were sort of... too American looking for me, and it didn't sort of sync up with the rest of the outfits.
Yeah.
Unless they are wearing those stupid aerobic outfits.
The blonde women sort of stuck out. They looked abnormal to me, but you know, they were all good dancers.
Yeah, and even if they were good dancers, you know, I don't mean to diss that, you're right, but for some reason the outfit, the classic belly dancing outfit and the exotic sort of darkened look goes together in such a stunning fashion that That's what I'm used to. That's what I want to see. I want to be intrigued by the exoticness of it.
Well, the other thing that sort of surprised me is, you know, I was hoping to see some veils across the face, you know, because that's what I've seen. They didn't have that. But I was surprised at how cool the dancing with the veil looked. And
yeah.
She would sometimes wrap the veil, or I think that's what it was, a veil around her arms. And then miraculously, she'd move, take some move, and it would be off her arms. And
right.
Just the way it all moved, it was very, very sexy.
Clearly, it was something practiced a lot, because it was very smooth.
It was sexy, but not, I mean, you didn't feel like you were watching a naughty show, you know what I
right.
mean?
Right, no, definitely.
It
definitely.
Was just sort of mesmerizing.
Right, right. Well, I came home and I did some research on belly dancing. Do you want to hear a little
yes.
bit about it?
Tell it.
Well, the name belly dancing, Pat, comes from the French. They called it danse du centre. No, sorry, danse du ventre. And that means dance the stomach. Doesn't sound nearly as exciting. Dance of the stomach. Watch my belly flip-flop. The Middle Eastern nations call it the Danse Oriental, but it's been traditionally associated, as you can probably guess, with the both religious and erotic elements. And this ambiguity has caused belly dance to be disdained, scorned, and loved by many. Its apparent origins of the fertility cults of the ancient world. And, you know, if you look back at the ancient world and all the female goddesses, I mean, this is from India, from the Far East, the Middle East, the Romans, the Greeks. They all have to do with fertility in some way, love or fertility or reproduction, right?
Diana is the goddess of the hunting.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Huh, anyway, carry on.
Well, that blows that theory. You just wrecked my bit.
I didn't wreck it in the original version.
Let's go back to the original one. We don't have it because George messed it up. Okay, that's the last I'll talk about that. So this is what sort of began, is that these, in the early days, they had these temple prostitutes. And they were honored citizens in their day and time.
Of course.
Well, this is what happens. My theory is when men are in charge of the early religions, gee, guess what? Multiple marriages are okay, and mistresses, prostitutes, that's holy.
Mandatory.
That's holy stuff. You know? I'm thinking if women were the originators of the religions,
yes,
it would be holy for men to clean up around the house.
Yes.
And what else? All kinds of other things that we don't
cook.
Like. Oh, yes. Cooking.
Stay at home. No pornography.
Oh, man. I'm glad that we got the upper hand on that. Anyway, there is ample evidence of the fact that these prostitutes, there were a lot of them, and they were revered. You can find this stuff in the writings of Socrates, Apollodorus, Plautus, and a bunch of others.
Huh.
Names I can't pronounce. Anyways, so sacred dancing had been part of this whole, part of their duties, their prostitution duties. And of course, what comes out of this dancing is the belly dancing. That's what they like the most. Now, what's interesting to note, in Egypt today, it is still a custom for the bride and the groom to hire a belly dancer for their wedding and then to take a picture with their hands on the belly dancer's stomach. For Saudi women, Pat, Saudi Arabia, the dance itself was considered to be sacred and not intended to be seen by men at all.
So they do it for other women?
I guess they do it for other women. It's a big lesbian thing in the Saudi community.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyways, let me just explain briefly what it is. Oriental dance is uniquely designed for the female body, which surprised me because I've been doing it since we got home last night. With an emphasis on abdominal muscles, hip moves, and chest moves.
Did you get those boob moves in too?
Well, did you notice that yesterday? They were shaking their... That part almost looked like a striptease show.
Yeah, it did.
Because they were like shaking their breasts up and down. A little ridiculous. And I hated it so much.
You loved it.
Anyway, it's a firm and earthy tradition. Traditionally done with bare feet connected to the ground. Now, how else would bare feet be... That sounds kind of like a stupid statement. Anyways, it is a dance characterized by smooth, flowing, complex, and sensual movements of the torso, alternating with shaking and shimmy-type moves.
Ooh.
And Pat's doing it right now in the studio.
Shaking and I'm shimmy. No, I want one of those special bras with all the, you know, sparklies on it. I'm thinking, I got a pair of cute black panties, but I need a cute black bra with sparklies on it.
Well, you know, and...
And shakies, too.
And you could, I mean, I was looking at all the outfits that they had amazing. You could buy these outfits. There are an amazing number of outfits for sale. I mean, who wears these things? You know, but they cost $400 to $500 each.
Wow.
Which is very expensive. In fact, I almost bought a $100 drum.
What?
I loved it.
Serious?
Oh, it sounded so good. And I played it, and I played it well. I
Did
thought
you
it
go,
sounded good.
Boom, 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 boom.
Boom, yo, ho, ho, ho. No, it was funny because I was playing it, I was trying it, and this little kid was watching me and started dancing.
Aww.
It's really funny, but it sounded great. It's $100. I almost
That's
bought
cheap.
It. Yeah, I know.
You should have bought it.
It was hand painted. Yeah, it was really sounded good.
Anyway, I thought it was a great show last night. It was very interesting, and I'm glad we went.
I'm glad that we went too. I'm meant to find the things, the chicks in the better things. Drippers in the club showing off their belly rings. They belly dancing, yeah, they belly dancing. What the fuck is that they doing? They belly dancing. Chicks attracted to fame, and I don't care about that, cause daddy play no games. So DJ, won't you keep it jumping? Anything can happen when Mr. Town is in the function. They belly dancing, yeah, they belly dancing. They belly dancing, yeah, they belly dancing. They belly dancing, yeah, they belly dancing. Let me see. This was kind of a tough week. It was kind of a, I don't know, I was down a little bit this week, but
right.
I had a couple.
Oh, you were down.
I was down a little bit. Oh, baby, I'm down. I'm really down.
Boom, boom,
I'm down.
Boom, boom.
Mixing up with the Beatles. By the way, that initial, the first song was Johnny Lee Hooker. And we did some Google searches for it. You know what we did? Boom, boom, hooker. And I was thinking, that looks like we're looking for something erotic.
It does.
Boom, boom, hooker. Anyway, so in my downness, I had a couple things that kind of pet peeved me. And when I say pet peeved me, I'm not the, things don't really get to me too much. But I just thought,
Well, what were they?
The first one was, you know how somebody, you're like 20 or 25 feet behind somebody walking in to like your office or something, and they sit there, they don't know, they open the door, they see you behind them, maybe they're not sure what to do, so they sit there and wait for you.
Well, they wait, and you have to scurry.
And then you have to, then the onus is on me, then I've got to like pick up my pace, and you know, I don't want to pick up my pace. My pace was just fine. I don't need anybody to open the door for me. I came with the expectation that I was going to open the door myself. Uh-huh. So my hands are ready to go.
Now, are these women who are opening the door or generally
They're
men?
Sexy women. No, I don't know. They're just anybody. Men,
I
women,
see.
Just... So to me, that's a pet peeve in our society because that person that's opening the door feels burdened because they got to wait, you know, for you to like walk up the hallway. They're doing it because... Probably because they don't want to be perceived as an asshole.
Right.
I've got to quicken my pace a little bit when I didn't want to. I feel put off. But if I don't, they're going to think I'm a little bit of an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing inconveniences both people and doesn't do anything good.
Well, I think it's just a small perception mistake because it is nice that this individual opens the door for you. It's just that they need to realize that they do it only when somebody is like within 3 seconds behind them. If they're
right.
more than 3 seconds, then, you know, that guy's got to open their own door. Something
so
like
let's
that.
Make it a rule.
Let's make a rule.
So from now on, if somebody opens the door for me, you know,
you
and
punch
I'm 20
in the
foot,
face?
No, I'm just going to say, hey, the 3 second rule applies here. Go on with your business. I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm good to go. I'm good to open the door on my own. Thanks.
So what's your other pet peeve?
The other one I had was you're in a grocery line, you know, checking out. Things
Somebody's
are going.
Somebody's feeling your melons.
Does that happen? That never happens to me, but does that happen to you? So somebody's feeling your melons, and it's fine. Who doesn't like their melons felt every now and then, right?
Ah.
No, you're just going through the line. Everything's fine. Maybe long, but whatever. Then you get this person that pulls out a checkbook.
Oh,
why do they do
no.
that? So, again, they have to go through the burden of waiting for everything to be rung up and then start writing on their check, pay to the order of Kroger 56. And everybody's sitting there waiting. I don't understand the checkbook. Now, more often than not, it's the old people that still have the checkbook. But you know how easy it is. You just swipe your card, right, your credit card, and you go on with your business. And then you just sign the thing when you're done. And electronically, it's all available to you in electronic records within a day. Where a checkbook, you have to go home, compile it into your register by hand. And it's just so ancient.
Well, you know, not everybody cares about stuff being electronically available. You know, I know people who won't fill out their income tax and submit it electronically because they have to give the feds their bank address or their bank account number, and they don't want the feds to know their bank account
there
number.
There are weird paranoid people out there. That's a weird one.
What, are the feds going to take your money and you're not going to know about it?
Yeah. You know, I have noticed in my account there's been like a $100 withdrawal per month by some guy named Uncle Sam. your friendly Uncle Sam or something. I don't get it, but no. So I'm thinking, on the checkbook thing, guys, if you're out there and if you've got a really good reason to use a checkbook, you know, write us, let us know what it is. But I think they should outlaw checkbooks at grocery stores. I only use a checkbook for one reason and one reason only, and that's to pay my housekeeper. Uh-huh. That's it. That's all I keep a checkbook for.
I have a checkbook to pay my lawn guy.
See, I pay him electronically.
You do?
I do. No. I have a service that sends out checks directly from my account.
I'm going to talk to him because we have the same lawn guy.
Yeah, we do. Steven Cecil, sure.
All righty.
I mean, he doesn't have any special service, but it's just a service that I have that pays checks, so I don't have to write any checks.
Oh, I see.
And again, it gets filed electronically, automatically.
Those are quite pet peeveful.
Those are my pet peeves for the week.
Well, I have a pet story this week.
Talking about pet peeves. What's your pet story?
Well, you know, Shotgun had his neutering this week.
I did not know that.
Yes, you did. We talked about it last week. He went in on
I wrote a song about it.
He
you
went
silly.
In on Monday.
And he's neutral now.
He's neutral now. And he, you know, I went in at lunchtime to check him out, and he was sitting in his little metal cage, and he was shaking, and I felt so bad. But when I picked him up at 6 o'clock, he was doing perfectly fine.
Now, when you saw him at lunchtime, had he had the procedure yet?
Yes, okay. He did. So, okay. But I said to the vet tech, I said, I think it must be cold in that room. And she said, no, he's just recovering from the anesthesia. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
So the only other thing is the next day, he wasn't interested in eating. And that kind of made me worried, but he's perfectly fine now. He's running around, chasing Belle around the house, and, you know, he had a great week. I gave him a couple of bones to make him happy. He's lost all his baby canine teeth, so now he's just getting his adult teeth in.
I was trying to think now, when we humans get our adult teeth, what age are we? Are we like 12,
five,
maybe? Oh, is it that early?
Six, something like that.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, so it's not really...
No, I'm wrong. You're right. That's when, So, I don't know when they get their
adult teeth. So maybe he's in like doggy.
What do I know about kids?
Well, you were once one, weren't you? So maybe he's going into doggy puberty now.
Well, yes, he is going into doggy puberty.
That's so exciting.
He has no balls. He has no testosterone.
Just like me when I was going through doggy puberty.
Well, I think this segues perfectly into our column from Dave.
Column from Dave. Dave Lobig from randomdigressions.com sent us in another installment.
Last week, it was about the prayer to God asking him to be a dog. And this week, we get to find out if God grants that request or not.
So let's give it a listen.
Well, I'm a dog now. God accepted my application to become a dog and see what I can learn from it. So I woke up this morning fuzzy and four-legged. And I really had to pee. Unfortunately, I couldn't open the door, and I had my first longing for human traits, opposable thumbs. So I lay back down, snuggled my nose underneath myself, and dozed until someone let me out. When I finally got out, I romped about the dewy yard, but added my contribution and never noticed the cool dew on my feet. It's the advantage of fur and the good padding. Despite the lack of thumbs, dog feet work fine for dogs. When the door reopened, I sprinted back into the kitchen and became overwhelmed, in fact, completely disoriented, by a wall of aroma the like of which humanity has never experienced. Coffee, so thick and mellow, donuts, sweet and buttery, and forks. I could actually smell forks being removed from the drawer. I was blinded by the rainbow of aromas. Before I knew it, I was sliding uncontrollably across the floor and slamming into the kitchen cabinet. My humans laughed. I was less amused, but still wholly excited about the smells. The thump of the cabinet quickly passed as the smells grew more captivating. My humans had something up there, and I knew it, and I wanted some. The only thing I got was a bowl of brown mush, but then I tasted it, and wow, it is good! Humans have no idea how exciting that is. I buried my face in that bowl, and the meaty aroma permeated my head, behind my ears, and deep inside my very being with every gulp. I cleaned that bowl, licked the sides, and licked them again. It was the most exciting breakfast I've ever had. Afterwards, I was ready for the day and got on with my doggy activities. I took a nap. When I woke, I played with a small human for a while. I had him throw the ball. I got to run and chase it. It was an invigorating exercise, and it got me ready for another nap. Later on, the bell rang, and we had a visitor, and I ran to the door, and I greeted him, and I jumped up and down, and I said hello, and he scratched me, and it felt really great, and the whole thing was just grand. Now he's my new best friend. So I napped again. What a day. What a life. It's been a long time since I had a day without an agenda and the compulsion to do something. Like so many other people, I've grown habituated with the to-do list and the calendars and the pressures and the traffic and the running about. It's so much a part of normal that it's easy to forget that it's mostly self-imposed. Mind you, we all have to do our part, earn our keep in the world, but in our maximize everything culture, we are often pressured to grasp at perfection, even in the most mundane concerns. We expect too much excellence in everything. We fill too many moments with goals. We make too much something over nothing. Thomas Merton said it best. He said, "Everything today must be a problem. Ours is a time of anxiety because we have willed it to be so. Our anxiety is not imposed on us by force from outside. We impose it on our world and upon one another from within ourselves." Dogs are smarter than that. During my day as a dog, I got a glimpse of their simple philosophy. Every problem is a passing matter, each joy a moment all its own, each person a new best friend. My simple contribution to the world is to be one of the peaceful creatures living in it. Somehow, that became easier to accept as a dog. I think I'll recommend it to all my people friends, right after I take a nap.
I thought that was a great column.
That was a fantastic column. You know, it not only was it funny, but it was actually kind of a meaningful about how the way we live our lives, how maybe we should simplify a little bit. This is a great column. Dave, thanks for sending us in. Dave did tell us he's kind of doing this exclusively for our show. So if you want to keep listening to it, listen to our show. This is great stuff.
Although I
have a suspicion when he gets really, really popular, he'll just blow us off.
He'll blow us off.
He'll blow us off so bad.
He'll give us the finger.
He'll give us the finger. That's what he's going to do. You know what? I hate Dave.
I love Dave.
We're just kidding. Anyway, we love that work, and I'm sure our listeners like it. You know, everything we do is like deja vu. It's a weird vibe in here, isn't it, doing this a second time?
Did you do that the first time? Because
I
feel like you did that the first time,
I can't remember. I think I did that the third time. We're actually in the fourth time, because the first time, Engineer George screwed up by diverting my voice not to the recorder. The next time, Pat's voice didn't make the recorder. So we're doing this a fourth time, because the third one, we just did it for practice. So.
Oi.
Oi. It's getting hotter and hotter in here.
It is hot in here. It's getting hot in here. I'm going to take my clothes off.
How can you take any more clothes off?
I'm going to take my skin off.
The weird thing is she's actually doing it. Oh, it's gross. Pat, put the skin back on, man.
There was quite a lot of excitement this week for me in my life.
There was, and you and your lover?
No, I didn't say that. My life.
I thought you said lover.
No.
Okay, tell us about it.
This week was KRLD Restaurant Week.
It was.
And I had plans to go to three places with some of my friends.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what KRLD Restaurant Week is all about?
Well, it's about an opportunity to go to restaurants and try out their food for a fixed price. It's $30. And then the restaurant also gives a portion of the money they bring in to a charity.
Yeah. So it's a pretty cool way to preview restaurants that are really, really expensive, right?
Yes.
And now the $30 includes what?
Well, usually there's an appetizer, an entree, and then a dessert. And anything else you get is, of course, extra.
Okay, so like drinks are extra.
Yes. So we went to Smith and Walensky. It was Susan, myself, Kevin, and we were supposed to be joined by David, but he wimped out on us.
Okay.
So for the first course, I had I had pizza.
Wow, pizza.
Yeah, imagine that.
At a steak place.
Kevin and Susan had what is kind of, I guess, a Smith and Walensky tradition. It's their split pea soup.
Oh.
It was very, very good. It wasn't a huge portion.
Did they actually split peas?
Yes, with an atom splitter.
Wow.
And they have, it wasn't a large portion, but large enough, very hearty soup. Very, okay. Very hearty soup.
They like, like what you can get at Hardee's?
Yeah. They had pretty good bread. I didn't like their butter. It was whipped. I'm not a fan of whipped butter.
Whip it good.
Okay. So the pizza, you'd think it would be about a plate size, a dinner
right.
plate size. I mean, a side plate. No, it was huge. It was like this. I ate like one piece and brought the rest
that's
home.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, we all had the same thing. We had the 10-ounce filet mignon.
And just to let everybody know, Smith & Walensky is a steak place primarily.
Yes.
So that's what you should have gotten probably.
It was spectacular.
Wow.
It was so good. Very cooked perfectly, tender, flavorful, extraordinary. And they also brought some béarnaise sauce that was just wonderful. I think I ate it all. I didn't want to let any of the other table members have any. Dessert was spectacular also. But by now, I was completely stuffed. I ordered a trio of creme brulees.
Hmm.
Chocolate, coconut, and then the regular one. Susan had, the cream puffs. What the heck are those called? I can't remember. They're not called profiteroles.
Okay.
Profiteroles. And then Kevin had pecan pie.
Mm.
Everything was extraordinarily good.
Wow.
Really, really good.
Good.
The next night, we went to Iris.
Iris, Lover's Lane.
Yes, it's on Lover's Lane near Inwood. And it's a pretty she restaurant. Now, their appetizers, there were pretty good options. I had a salad that was a field green salad with goat cheese. Beautifully presented. It tasted great.
Wow.
They had really good bread. Great butter. I mean, oh my God.
Whip it good.
It was not whipped.
Don't whip it good.
Fantastic butter. But I'd have to say after that, not so good. I ordered the risotto. I did not think their menu choices were all that impressive.
I've never been a big risotto fan, you know?
Well, they had, Kevin got the swordfish. And
okay.
They overcooked it.
No way.
Yes.
A nice restaurant cannot overcook fish.
Well,
that is inexcusable.
They managed to do it. So Susan had the salmon, which was really good. And I forget what David had. But here was the thing. Most of the entrees, I didn't like the sides. They didn't sound that good to me.
Really?
Yeah. Now, then came dessert. Dessert for me was a peach crisp. Not that good.
See, crisp is an adjective. It's not really a noun. It always struck me as a funny name for dessert.
Yeah, well,
I had a moist.
It wasn't crispy. There was very little crispy part
the crisp
to it.
Crisp wasn't crispy.
Right.
So why even have a noun become the adjective if it does not the adjective?
Still, you know, we all went home very stuffed on all of these meals.
Sure.
The last night, Thursday night, we went to Del Frisco's. And I had been to Del Frisco's once before.
I've had like two or three good meals at Del Frisco.
My memory of it was that it was really good. It was very disappointing.
Wow,
let me just start out with, we went to the bar and I ordered a dirty martini. And
yum.
I also got one for Kevin. $12 each.
Oh, well, they paid you they made you pay a not drinking martini correct tax.
Why do you say that?
For those that don't know, a real martini is you use gin and vermouth.
Hate gin.
So how can you hate gin? Then you don't like, you're just ordering vodka. That's what you're getting.
Well.
You're getting vodka with a bit of olive juice.
Well.
Anyway.
Like I was saying. So we sit down. The appetizer here, most of the places you had choices of what kind of appetizer you want.
Yeah.
No, at Del Frisco's, it was just a salad.
You got
you
what they're
a
giving
salad.
You.
And it wasn't anything special.
Hmm.
Not at all special.
Wow.
And I think they had two types of meat for the entree. So we all got the same thing. We got the 6-ounce filet mignon.
Okay.
So it was 6 ounces in contrast to the 10 we had at Smith and Walensky.
Wow. Now, well, I'm sorry. I missed it. Was the Smith and Walensky also filet?
Yes. Okay. Exactly the same cut of meat.
Okay.
It both were, you know, also at Del Frisco's, I would have to say, was a fantastic piece of meat.
Sure. Again, to the listeners, Del Frisco is primarily a steak place.
Right. And dessert was horrible.
No way.
There was only one choice for what you could have, and it was some kind of cheesecake. But it was a weird cheesecake. Huh. I took one bite and said, that's it. I ain't eating no more.
And I can't imagine you saying that.
I know. I eat everything.
Wow.
So it was kind of disappointing. Now, we did supplement the meal with some shrimp and some crab cakes. And the crab cakes were extraordinarily good.
Yeah, I had crab cakes at Del Frisco before. They're great. So, I like the shrimp a lot, too.
Yeah, but, you know, it easily, just the shrimp and the crab cakes added another, I don't know, it was like $30 or $40 to the meal. It was not cheap.
I don't doubt it. Yeah.
It wasn't cheap.
Wow.
Anyway.
Well, how did the steak compare to the Smith & Walensky's?
It was good. I mean, it was just as good. I'd have to say you couldn't really tell which one was better. Ooh. I liked the atmosphere at Smith & Walensky better. It seemed I just liked it more.
Well, I'm going to try Smith & Walensky.
Yeah, I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
Now, we're hoping to get into the mansion because Restaurant Week in some places is being extended. So
right.
I know what the mansion it is and also at that other place that
And
you're
I'm going to make
in.
Some reservations for us for Abacus.
Abacus.
Abacus, a restaurant I love that's just way too expensive to go on our own.
I've never been there.
It's a great place. And the ambience is beautiful. They spent mega bucks on the interior as well.
Well, anyway, here's the funny thing. As long as I've lived here in Dallas,
uh-huh.
I'd never heard of KRLD Restaurant Week.
Yeah, me neither.
So this was my first time going, and I enjoyed it, and I'm going to remember to go next year.
So check it out, everybody. Like we said, some restaurants, the week is technically over. Some restaurants have extended. In fact, a number have. So check it out.
You're all my lovely sweet. Yes, I'm cooking for my son and his wife. It's his 30th birthday. Pour berries into my bowl at the milk of 2 months ago. It's Mardi, Mom, isn't it? I don't give a flying fuck about.
Well, I forgot to mention this at the top of the show. We mentioned it at the top of the show the first time we did the show. But this is the six-month anniversary of this show.
And to celebrate our anniversary, I went to a very special place and got a special treat.
What kind of special place?
I went to 7-Eleven.
Wow. Hey, let's play the song. 7-Eleven.
Thank heaven.
7-Eleven.
Thank heaven.
It's time for that 7-Eleven update.
I love that song.
All right. So, what kind of special treat?
Well, I got the chocolate cheesecake muffin.
Wow.
And I've cut it up in little pieces so that we can both taste it. There are some pieces that have cheesecake on it. It doesn't look like a whole lot, and some that's mainly just the chocolate cake.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a taste now. Have a piece, Jeff. Mmm.
All right, I'll try a piece. I had a piece in our first show.
That sounded enthusiastic. All right, I'll try a piece.
Well, because I had one already.
Mmm. I think it's pretty good. I mean, all right. It's not...
Eh, it's normal.
It's better than any kind of Little Debbie's cake, for example.
Definitely.
And it's not as good as something that would come from Tarte, the bakery.
Right.
But it's good.
Yeah. No, it's good for 7-Eleven, too.
It's fresh.
Yeah.
And the chocolate is really good, very chocolatey.
Right.
Moist, yummy. But I had another perfect 7-Eleven moment.
Did you now? Oh, by the way, before we go there, happy anniversary, Pat.
Oh, happy anniversary to you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Aww.
This is 27 shows without a break.
That's right.
And I'm starting to feel the stress.
Poor Jeff. We need to send love to Jeff. He's feeling unloved.
We'll be taking a break soon.
Anyway, last week, as you know, I reported that they've got some kind of special cappuccino promotion going on, but every time I go into the 7-Eleven, they never have it.
Right.
It's that chocolate cherry cappuccino.
Yes.
So on Wednesday, I go on my way to work, stop to get coffee, And I was greeted with what I perceived to be almost near tragedy. I'm getting my coffee ready. I'm reaching over to get the coffee, and I pull out Coffee Mate. It's fake milk. It's not half and half.
You love Coffee Mate.
I was like, oh my God, what is this? I was paralyzed. I thought, this cannot be.
Maybe 7-Eleven is changing their
policy. Well, that's why I was worried about that. So I went and got one of the 7-Eleven girls and said, where's the half and half? And she said, it's in your hands. I'm like, no, this isn't half and half. So she went in the back and brought out a whole big case of half and half.
Oh, that leftover case from 2003?
So, you know, everything was good. I made my coffee. I went up to the front of the line, and the guy said to me, your coffee's free.
What?
My coffee's free? And he said, yes, I was going to make sure I had the cappuccino, the new cappuccino flavor for you today, and wow. I don't. So I want you to come back tomorrow when I've got it. Your coffee's free today. So I left, and then I didn't go back on Thursday or Friday.
Because you were so disgusted by the jerkiness. No.
But on my way to your house today, I made a special point of driving by that 7-Eleven, stopping and seeing if they had the new flavor cappuccino, the chocolate cherry sundae. They did. I bought it. It's great.
Wow. Will you get it again?
Yes, I will.
Good.
But, you know, the problem is I'm pretty sure they're more calorific than regular coffee.
They're so good. They're calorific.
So anyway, 7-Eleven didn't disappoint. But I think if we're going to be talking about calories, you've got sort of a revelation.
Yeah, I kind of screwed up. I feel like an idiot. But I was telling this to Pat, and she thought, that's too funny. You got to tell the podcast listeners out there, because then they'll really think you're an idiot. So for the last 4 months, well, longer than that, I've really been eating healthy. I've been exercising more. I'm in pretty good shape, but I'm just trying to lose the last couple inches off the waist. And
because you want to look hot in your bathing suit.
Yeah, I just want to look a little bit better. I mean, I look great already.
Come on.
It's just that.
I roll.
Yeah, I roll. But, you know, I'm just such an analytical kind of guy that I'm thinking, okay, my gosh, I'm eating like 1,700 calories a day, and I'm not losing any weight or inches. That doesn't make any sense. How can a grown guy, 6'4" guy, have a metabolism that is that low? I knew that couldn't be because I don't have the symptoms of a low metabolism, which is, you know, you're kind of sluggish and so forth. So something mathematically was off, Pat, and I thought, I'm going to have to go see a doctor because this just doesn't make sense.
Maybe you'd get an anal probe.
That's what I was hoping for. That's the only reason I go to the doctor these days. You know, it really makes me mad when she goes, well, your exam's done. It's like, what? No anal probe?
Stick your finger up my butt,
but
bitch.
But you don't need your colonist to be your colon check this time. I think you're wrong, Doc. Give it to me. I do have a female doctor. She's like, are you sure you don't mind? That's what she said. It's like, come on. I'm a grown man. Just do it. I want the risk of colon cancer because I'm too embarrassed to have you put your finger in my butt. You know.
Wow, we completely got off the calorie topic.
So anyways, I realized something really stupid. I do tend to eat popcorn, munch on popcorn, or munch on a whole thing of Ben and Jerry's at night.
A whole thing. Not half, not two scoops, a whole thing.
I start off with the intention of doing a half, and then I go to a... But here's the deal. Okay, I know that's stupid, but here's the deal. I thought in my head that the popcorn I was eating was about 200 to 300 calories, which was in my schedule, just fine, and that the... Ben and Jerry's was 400 to 500 calories. I really thought 400 calories. So I looked on Wednesday and I realized the carton that I was eating was 1,000 calories and probably some other flavors are more than that.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, it kind of makes me feel good in that, okay, now the mathematics works out actually, you know? So now the challenge is just stop eating the ice cream and I think I'll be fine. I think I'll be turning into... you know, a hot man in no time.
Well, do you ever eat ice cream and popcorn in the same night?
Sometimes I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
I just got to, you know what I got to do? I just got to stop that habit.
That's like 1,500 calories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
So that's it right there.
You should be melting away to nothing soon after you don't eat any more ice cream.
I don't want to do that. You hear that dog in the background?
Huh? Yeah.
That is my neighbor's dog,
which
we never really hear because... normally, we're not doing it this late. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
And he's loud and obnoxious.
Let's listen to him for a minute.
And now he's shut up.
Woof, woof.
There he is. As a, you know, that sucks. I hate dogs in the backgrounds. So unprofessional, so uncool, but too bad.
You were quite the busy guy yesterday because in addition to going to see the exotic Oriental dancing, Middle Eastern dancing, you did something else, didn't you, Jeff?
I did. I saw the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin. I was going to say 14-Year-Old Virgin. Which, you know, in probably 20 years, that will be a really big oddity, right? This is the 40-year-old virgin. And I was really excited about it because it's, you know, it got a lot of play.
Ton of positive pre-press.
And you know what, Pat? This is a good movie. It's fun. It's entertaining.
Hey, we've had a problem here. Can say again, please.
This is Jeff without Pat, and this is post-show. Well, the strangest thing happened. Our recording just stopped right in the middle of the review that I was doing for the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin, and I have no explanation for it. In fact, I'm a little bit worried about my equipment. So basically, we've had two engineering problems today, which is probably just par for the course for the whole week. I'm going to go ahead and do the review for 40-Year-Old Virgin, because I figure some of you may be interested in seeing that movie this week. And then I'll wrap up without Pat. So I'm sure Pat doesn't want to hear my review for a third time anyways. So anyways, I saw 40-Year-Old Virgin, I guess it was last night, right before the belly dancing thing. And it was a good movie, but it wasn't great. And I'll tell you, I had such expectations for it because they had promoted the heck out of it. It got really good reviews. I normally don't go to movies that aren't well reviewed. And it was good. It was pleasant. But it didn't quite have the belly laugh capability of a recent movie that I saw, The Wedding Crashers. And I don't know if the problem is either in two areas. It's either one, the writers didn't sort of spend the extra 2 weeks making everything clean and sort of making some of the jokes work a little bit better, or the second possibility, which is a lot of the work ended up on the cutting room floor, and I think they post-produced and edited a lot out, which made it a little bit strange. So I'll give you a couple examples. There was one example where this guy, the Paul Rudd character, brings over this box of porn to the 40-year-old virgin's house, and he goes, "I think you need this more than I at this point. You know, you need to practice up or whatever." And 40-year-old virgin is like, "I don't want this in my house. Get rid of it." And Paul Rudd wouldn't take it back. And finally, Paul Rudd leaves, and he yells out so all his neighbors could hear, "Why are you giving me your porn? I don't want your porn." So it's to kind of embarrass the 40-year-old virgin, right? So it's kind of a funny scene. It's not a belly laugh scene. It's kind of amusing. But you think in the back of your head, well, this is being set up. So there's going to be this box of porn is going to come up later. You know, maybe they pass around the box of porn. It becomes a running gag. Maybe the fact that his neighbors now think the 40-year-old virgin is like this porn-watching guy, maybe that's going to bring itself out later on in some sort of funny way. And it doesn't happen. The only reference to it later in the movie is his love interest finds one of the porn tapes and asks him about it. And it was just it wasn't a funny moment. It wasn't even that really useful or interesting to the movie. So I'm guessing funnier stuff happened that they edited out. There was like several examples, and I won't go through this, but I found this a lot. And so, again, either the comedy writers just didn't take it that step to bring it above sort of a mediocre comedy movie into a great movie, or some of it was just not edited right, and the editors kind of botched up the movie. I shouldn't say botched up. Again, it was a good, pleasant movie. The other thing about it is the 40-year-old virgin himself was not a real intriguing character. I mean, he was very likable, and you kind of ended up being drawn into his world a little bit and seeing, you know, sort of why he became a virgin and how that problem came about. But you didn't really care about him too much because he wasn't that interesting. And one of the things Pat mentioned in the two times we've gone through this morning is she had heard an NPR article about this, and the director sounded really engaging, she said, but he was saying how the writers just sort of wrote everything down as fast as possible, boom, 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 And he directed all kinds of scenes, and they did sort of put it all together at the end. And that's what it felt like, and it felt like that process. I guess I'd say that the director, maybe not the right process. It's almost like if Pat and I would do a podcast and just sort of have a bunch of random things and edit it all together in some sort of weird way, which is, I guess, kind of what we do. Wait a minute. But normally we do have segues. But hey, we're not professionals out trying to make millions of dollars on a movie. So good movie. I wouldn't go racing to see it as... having clever comedy or big belly laughs. If you want that, go see The Wedding Crashers, because that's much better. Hey, that's going to do the show. I wish Pat was here to say goodbye as well, but please give us a voicemail. We don't get too many of those lately. It's area code 206-202-8255. That's 206-202-TALK. You can send mail to the show at Jeff and Pat at thisandthatpodcast.com. You can send me individually at Jeff at thisandthatpodcast.com or Pat individually at Pat at thisandthatpodcast.com. And Pat informed us that Shotgun is now taking email. It's Shotgun at thisandthatpodcast.com. So Shotgun's writing is a little bit difficult, and Pat does have parental controls on his computer capabilities. But, Shotgun loves to hear from fans as well. So I do want to take this time to send out a few shout-outs. First of all, to Shoko. Thank you very much. She really liked the song and gave us some great feedback, as she normally does. Ferg, thank you very much, from airferg.com. He sent me a lot of support and help and some things I was having trouble with this week. That's much appreciated. Charlie from Israelisms. I can never say that right. Pat always corrects me, but you guys got to listen to Israelisms on Israelisms.com. Charlie and Carol have got a great show, and they're supporters of this show as well, and they're doing great things. Pat had mentioned, I'm trying to remember what Pat brings into this stuff, and Pat had mentioned that she and Charlie had swapped some emails about the whole Gaza thing, and said it was very interesting. Kevin at RadioFilibuster.com sent us some great email. Lindsay, an old childhood pal of mine, sent some information on 7-Eleven and some sort of real businessy, nerdy statistics on it that I just loved. Found really interesting. In a nutshell, 7-Eleven is pretty darn advanced in the way they use IT and the way they use data analysis, so it's kind of cool. Another Lindsay. How many shows have two Lindsays listening to them? Lindsay Graham from deconstruction.org, been emailing, doing some exchanges with him. If you guys like independent music, especially in the Dallas area, but this really applies to any place, Lindsay, and I can't remember the name of his co-host, have a site called deconstruction.org where they highlight Dallas indie bands. And they don't just play indie music. What they do is they analyze indie music. They talk to producers. They critique it. And Lindsay's got a great calendar on their website where they sort of look at shows that are coming out in the Dallas area that they would recommend, which is a really great help, because you figure you got 200 bands playing a week. I don't know what the number is. It really helps to have somebody say, yeah, these are the ones worth seeing. So check out that website. He does a great job. It's really nice to listen to the website, especially if you're a music geek like I am. And I know there's a lot of you out there. Douglas, one of our listeners from England, sent some really nice email, and I really do appreciate that as well. Last but not least, Brad P., Tom T., Danny, and Lynn, and Neil from Borderline.net. Thanks all for the love. And I guess that's gonna take it. I will say for Pat, she says all our listeners are, let's see if I remember her phrase, groovy cool. No, I can't remember what she said. I don't know what she'd say.
You're the best friends anybody ever had.
She loves you guys, as do I. We will see you next week. Take care. Bye.